When Jeffrey Dahmer, the serial killer, was arrested back in 1991, his crimes of killing, torturing, dissecting, and preserving the dead bodies of his victims set him apart from humanity. His ordinary face and voice were suddenly bizarre. His Milwaukee Midwest deadpan suddenly a menace to everyone.
In ninth grade, in biology class, we had the usual dissection of fetal pigs. I took the remains of that home and kept the skeleton of it. And I just started branching out, dogs, cats. I suppose it could have turned into a normal hobby like taxidermy.
Jeffrey Dahmer speaking there on NBC News, long after his arrest and before his brutal death in prison. But his voice was not a menace or any kind of a freak show for the kids who actually grew up with him and might have been in his biology class. Durf Backdurf went to school with Jeffrey Dahmer in Milwaukee and was one of his few friends. That fact haunted Backdurf for decades while he was a successful writer and cartoonist. He finally wrote My Friend Dahmer, a book-length look at his memories of the serial killer before he was a serial killer.
At that point, it was only 13 years since high school, and my memory of it was that it was fairly typical, boring teenage experience, and then just like that, it completely changed. It was all redefined in this very sinister way when you had this iconic serial killer threading his way through your own personal life story, and things which had been throwaways that had been not important suddenly became important, and right then, you know, the light bulb started just going off in my head. I should write about this.
This is a story of how a set of otherwise utterly random, goofy incidents in high school become a chain of tragic cause and effect incidents that lead to one of the worst cases of brutality in the history of civilization.
Pretty much, yeah. It's this inexorable march toward the edge of the abyss. And the remarkable thing is that no one stepped up and said, whoa, there's something really wrong with this guy, particularly the adults. And nobody said a word. They just kept shoving him on, figuring, I don't know, he'd be someone else's problem in a few years. And yeah, he was someone else's problem.
Who was he when you first encountered him?
He was just a very quiet, nerdy kid with black horn rimmed glasses and blonde hair. This is when I first met him, right around age 12, just part of the scenery. He seemed to have really very little personality at all. We were in classes together, and he was my lab partner one year in junior high. And then later, of course, he began to really act out and become, to us, this small band of band nerds who, for a time, actually called ourselves the Dahmer Fan Club. He became suddenly very interesting with his outrageous behavior.
The Dahmer Fan Club. Was he the class clown, or was he the object of just weirdness?
He was just kind of this fearless kid who would perform these various bizarre acts of weirdness, pretend he had cerebral palsy, he'd throw fake epileptic fits in the hall or in study hall, he'd bleat like a sheep in the cafeteria. And this, you know, appealed to us in the way that stupid things appeal to teenage boys, especially in a small town. We were all bored to death. For his part, he remembers this time very fondly. It was very likely, sad to say, the best time of his life because he was the center of attention and in a positive way, not the center of attention as he would later become. And he had friends and he, you know, he had a little social life going on there for a while. So Jeff himself does not view it as a put down.
But still, there's a quality of sort of cruelty and predation amongst teenage boys of that age that
there is,
sort of
but
comes with the territory.
There is, but not really from the lower strata, which we were definitely part of. You know, we were getting picked on a lot too, so we weren't putting anybody down. There are really no heroes in this book, and I don't really try to apologize for this, you know, this behavior or explain it away. I mean, everybody at some level fails, including Jeff himself, of course, spectacularly. But there are no successes in this tale.
Is it possible to remove hindsight from this and evaluate the moment when he first kind of scared you?
There was certainly, this guy gave off just this aura of doom. I mean, you could just feel it on him. You knew he was not going to wind, it was not going to wind up well for him, mainly because of the drinking, which was shocking, the consumption.
He drank hard liquor to become numb.
Hard liquor, yeah. He was self-medicating himself, we know now, through his own explanation.
I was drinking a lot during that time. And just, I don't know, looking for something to, some way to find some fulfillment, some pleasure. And I acted on my fantasies, and that's where everything went wrong.
Morning bell, you would smell the booze on his breath. He used to walk through the halls of the school with a styrofoam coffee cup, like out of the coffee machine, full of whiskey or scotch, or walking right down the halls of the school.
The incident where he goes fishing and
hacks a fish to bits that he catches, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a spooky one.
It really happened.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was my friend Neil.
He catches a little sunfish.
Right, and hacks it to bits just to see what it looked like.
Right, yeah. In front of Neil.
Right, right. Who was shocked by the brutality of it, yeah. In fact, I was just at the farm where that took place. That actually came fairly early on and really was probably the genesis of this book. Just after the crimes broke, a couple of my friends and I got together. There were three of us, all in the Dahmer fan club, just to commiserate. And, you know, can you believe this? Can you believe what's happening to us? Because, I mean, it was a nightmare. I mean, we were right at the center of this media maelstrom. I had camera trucks parked in front of my house every day waiting, you know, beating on my door. So we got together at Neil's house, which just happened to be down the hill from Jeffrey Dahmer's boyhood home. And there were just media lined up miles in either direction on this country road. And right across from Dahmer's house, two little girls had set up a lemonade stand. As the police investigators were sifting through the dirt on Dahmer's property looking for bone fragments. I mean, that's how surreal this whole thing was at that time. But we sat there and we just exchanged stories. And that's the first time I heard that fishing story.
How many people do you think out there have said, oh, that guy's probably a serial killer now, about someone?
Yeah, I think it's fairly common, yeah.
But you said that about Dahmer.
Yes, yeah.
Like, long before the crimes broke.
Yeah, about probably about 3 or 4 years, yeah. He had just dropped off the face of the earth after high school graduation was the last time I saw him. And even though he was in town off and on over the next couple of years, I never saw him again. He just vanished. And the reason for that, of course, was that he had already killed. 2 weeks after our graduation, he killed his first victim. And, you know, he fell off the edge of the abyss, and that changed him forever.
Well, Durf Backderf, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
Durf Backderf is the author of the book My Friend Dahmer, a story chronicling his childhood memories of Jeffrey Dahmer.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.